Well, the dust settled somewhat in the big fight night in Saudi Arabia, and of course our very own Joseph Jurassic Parker was pretty damn incredible for me. And we can get quite excited down here, so I've brought the voice of reason. Let's call him the voice of reason. He's sitting in the neutral corner at the moment, very much respected boxing writer and analyst and podcaster in the neutral corner. Michael Montero joins us once again. Michael, we are so excited to have you on here. Nearly as excited about that as we are about Joseph Parker. We can get ahead of ourselves a little bit down here because we're a little country. We've got this guy mixing it up with the bigs over in the in Saudi now, but all around the world, real contender. He's been the WBO world champion. Should we be as excited as we are? What are you seeing from Joseph?
Yeah, I'm excited. Over here in the States, I'm really excited. He has been on one heck of a run. And I got to tell you, you go back to 2022 when he lost that fight to Joe Joyce. So that was a rough knockout. I mean, that was a hard one-punch knockout. I admit, I fully thought he was done. I just thought Joseph Parker at the elite level was done. What he's done since then is just get active. He's fought, I believe, five times in less than a year and a half, which these days that is unheard of in this era of boxing where increasingly there's a lot of fighters that fight just once a year. So that activity has kept him in shape. If you look at what he's weighed at in these recent fights, he's a little less in weight than he was for that fight with Joyce. And he's just sharp. And I think it's that activity and all the experience of all that he's fought everybody. He's fought everybody in the division. So he brings that experience. He's seen the ups and downs. And he's active, he's in shape, he's sharp. I think that was the difference against Zhile Zhang this past Friday in Riyadh. What a performance. What a performance. Because remember, he got dropped twice in that fight. Mm. His nose was bloodied. He was in there against a massive mountain of a man. Zhang is 290 plus pounds. He's a mountain. And Parker stood in there, took the punishment in the first half of the fight, but outworked Zhang in the second half of the fight. He actually doubled up the amount of power punches landed, Parker did, and he went to the body a lot, and that slowed Zhang down. So it was just a war of attrition, and because Parker has been active with all that experience, it's just carried him through in these recent fights. I got him ranked fourth in the world at heavyweight. You got to have Usyk and Fury number one and two. You got to have Joshua three, but he's right there with those guys. And when you think about how long he's been a pro, and again, you go back just a couple years ago to 2022 with that tough knockout loss, that's incredible. That is incredible.
It's not a criticism. My observation of Joe up until maybe 3 years ago, and it's sort of my observation of a lot of New Zealand boxers, is amazing offense, questionable defense. And Joe was always going straight back, not going back on the 45s. He was a retreating target. Andy Lee has been, and I'm not poo-pooing what Kevin Barry did and opened doors for Joseph Parker, but Andy Lee seems to have changed his mental game, his tactical game. They're both buying into each other. It's a rebirth of Joseph. So defense, I think defense isn't talked about enough in boxing. Are you seeing a similar type thing with Joe?
I'm seeing tighter defense and just a more focused fighter. I'm so glad you brought up Andy Lee. Now, you have to remember who Andy Lee trained under. The great, and I emphasize the word great, Emmanuel Stewart. You see the crunk trunks on my wall back there. Okay, I'm from Detroit, so I'm a big Emmanuel Stewart guy. Andy Lee lived with Emmanuel in Detroit. They lived together. So you think of all that experience that he absorbed, and now he's giving that to Joseph Parker, that crunk toughness, that grit. And Parker's always been an explosive, powerful athlete. You mentioned his great offense. Well, now he's got that focus and that toughness, that crunk energy. Mm. See, I'm getting excited again. and I'm telling you, he is a problem. He is a problem for anybody in this division right now.
The cool thing about Joe that I've loved, he said no to nobody. He's like, yeah, I'll fight anybody, anywhere, anytime. I want to be exactly. active and that sort of thing. And that was your point early on. What path he has to fight Zhang again? And I, straight after the fight, I thought, will the big guy want to fight him again? Because he got completely undone. And I think Joe can get a lot better having been in the ring with Zhang. I don't know if Zhang can, because he's going to be another year older. You know, he's going to be 41 again. But Zhang said he wants it. We've got Tyson and we've got Usyk, who have got a double. If, for example, Joseph beats Zhang, Tyson beats Usyk twice, they have to fight each other. Andy Lee says they won't. I don't want them to. I love what Tyson and Joe have got. Can the organizations make them fight?
No, unfortunately, they can't force them to fight. And because they're such good friends, I don't see it happening. The best thing that can happen for boxing, well, let's back up. The rematch, you mentioned the rematch between Parker and Zhang. I agree with you that I think Parker can do better. There are actually some fundamental mistakes he made in the first half of the fight. And to his credit, and I think Andy Lee was a big part of this, they made adjustments in the second half of the fight. So I think he could start quicker. And I think that he can be sharper early on now that he's seen Zhang and what he's going to do. There's a few times early on where he kind of stood right in front of him and ate big left hands. I think it was big left hands. Mm. So he can improve on that, which is scary to think about. If he improves and does better in the rematch, he might stop Zhang, which would be a huge statement. So the best thing that could happen for boxing is if Usyk beats Fury when they fight in May and Parker beats Zhang in the rematch, which you got to think will probably be later this summer, maybe in the fall. And then you have the possibility of Parker and Usyk. I like that. Just the styles and then the chance for Parker to fight for Undisputed. Ooh, that'd be big.
I want to touch on a couple of other fighters, just where you're at. The AJ fight did all he had to do, but I felt like the world went a little bit crazy saying it was his best fight ever. And I don't want to take away from anyone that gets in the square circle. And Francis Ngannou, you're a UFC fighter. You had a crack at it. Tyson Fury was 20% of what he could be when he fought Francis. I thought, is the world getting a bit too excited about AJ's performance against Francis Ngannou?
Absolutely. I talked about this on my podcast, The Neutral Corner. I could not believe the odds, the betting odds for that fight were as close as they were. Mm. That I have no idea what people were watching. Francis Ngannou is tailor-made for what Anthony Joshua does. The easy money, it was free money to bet Joshua by knockout. It was just free money. It's basically like printing free money. So look, great performance by Joshua, but he literally did what he was supposed to do. Mm. A world-class boxer is a master of stand-up martial arts. It's the pinnacle of stand-up martial arts. It just is. MMA guys are a jack of all trades, which is admirable, but they are a master of none. Mm. And you go in there against a master at his craft, in his world, it's going to get rough in there. And Joshua's a powerful puncher. He set up the knockout beautifully. But if you notice, right after the knockout, Joshua didn't exactly jump up and down and celebrate. Mm. He was very stoic because he basically knew he was in there with a novice. And that's what you're supposed to do with a novice. So I compare, and I'm not saying this to disparage Francis Ngannou, as you mentioned, great in the UFC, one of the best champions they've ever had. But he's basically on the level of the first few opponents Joshua faced as a pro in terms of skill set. Mm. That's the honest truth, right? Mm. He's got the skill set of a four-round fighter in the pros, who prospects fight. So great performance by Joshua, but he pretty much did what he needed to or was supposed to do. I'll say this for Joshua. Other than Parker, he's been the most active heavyweight too. Both of these guys have been very active, and that's the best thing for them, and that's why they've gone on the great runs that they've been on. The two hottest heavyweights right now, Joseph Parker, Anthony Joshua.
Another heavyweight that sort of popped up and he's disappeared again. We haven't heard much about him. Deontay Wilder, who with that feared right hand, but I watched a lot of his fights and that was pretty much it. Awesome walk-in music, awesome walk-in costume, and a big right hand, people saying he's powerful. Give me Ernie Shavers any day. Dante Wilder, there's probably still money to be made for him if he wants. He does draw good pay-per-views. Where does he sit now? What does he get back in the ring?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. There are rumors. There were rumors floating around that he might fight Otto Wallin. There's a couple other opponents mentioned. For him to get a fight, look, there's still a big fight between him and Anthony Joshua that I think would still sell. But Wilder has to get back in the ring and get a win before they can make that a pay-per-view, you know, event that's going to sell. And it remains to be seen if he wants to do that. I think Wilder's peaked. And like, I've been called a Deontay Wilder critic. It's not that I'm a critic of Wilder. I'm a critic of some of the people in media and the fans that were calling him a Hall of Fame level guy, an all-time great, the hardest puncher in boxing history. That's ridiculous. I completely agree with you. Give me Ernie Shavers any day. He would have destroyed Wilder. No disrespect. He's carved out a wonderful career for himself. And he's a great marketer, and the right hand is money. Okay. There's dynamite in that right hand. But at this stage of his career, I just don't think he can set it up anymore. And I think he's done. I think, you know, maybe one more fight in his native Alabama, like a homecoming or something like that, and then he's going to hang him up.
And the biggest of the biggest ever, and I'm talking about box office, is Fury Joshua. With all of these contracts in place, With the activity that Tyson Fury's shown, or his inactivity was shown, we're probably 18 months, 2 years away from that still.
Yeah. You know, you're absolutely right. I talked a minute ago about what's best for boxing, and if we got Usyk Parker, as a boxing nerd, that's the matchup I want.
Right.
But in terms of box office, what the gods who run boxing want is for Fury to win and him and Joshua to fight, because the two of them could fight at the O2 Arena in London and shatter every attendance record, live gate revenue, all of it. So it would be massive. But you're absolutely correct in that if Fury beats Usyk, he's probably not fighting again this year, if ever. And at best, you're talking maybe next summer, a fight between him and Joshua. AJ is not going to wait around for that. He's going to stay busy and keep moving.
With Usyk, Fury, Joshua, and I'll even potentially put Wilder in for the box office matchmakers. Joe Parker, like, we both love him, but he doesn't have that box office pull yet. Well, he didn't. Do you think beating Wilder and beating Zhang has got him knocking on the door of those big pay-per-views?
I think so, especially if remember, he's fought in the UK. He's fought a couple of popular UK fighters, so he does have a brand over there. So at this point, you know, for Parker, the only place to go is for that undisputed championship, and he could become a mandatory for one of the sanctioning organizations, and it could be him versus the winner of Fury, Usyk. I think that's the only way to go, and obviously that would be a big pay-per-view show.
I could talk boxing all day, and I can see we've been going a few minutes, but I'm going to keep going. There's a boxer that not many people are talking about, and I don't know whether it's because he hasn't done enough or the big promoters don't want him in the ring with their boxers. Hrgović looks scary to me. What can you tell us about this man?
I think Hrgović, you know, it's probably a little underappreciated. He's a little stiff. He doesn't move very well. He's not as fluid as, say, Joseph Parker, but he's a tough nut to crack. You know, he beat Zhang in a close fight. It was a very close fight, but I think you got to consider him a top five heavyweight. He's probably right there after Joseph Parker. The unfortunate thing for Hrgović is he brings almost nothing to the table economically. He has no brand to speak of, so that's going to hurt him. He's going to have to work his way up through the sanctioning bodies and get a mandatory position to fight for a belt. That's probably the only way he's going to ever get a championship fight. But he definitely would be competitive with any heavyweight in the world. And until somebody can beat him and knock him down and show that he can be stopped, I think he's going to go as far as his chin will take him.
Mm. I wanted to talk to you about the trainers now. Like in the golden era of heavyweight boxing, we saw 60, 70-year-old trainers. You've talked about Manny Stewart. The new breed, Andy Lee, Ben Davison, has done an amazing job with Anthony Joshua. Are we seeing this new breed of young trainer, new ideas, different energy? Is this now the template? Is Ben Davison and Andy Lee, are they our marquee trainers for the next 20 years?
Yeah, I think if they both stuck with it, they absolutely could be. And we're also seeing a rise in father-son teams as well. Naoya Inoue's father trains him. Vasily Lomachenko's father trains him. So, and they're young comparative to the trainers of the past. So I do think we're seeing a changing of the guard, and it's become so much more international. This sport is more global than it's ever been. Mm. It used to be when you thought boxing trainers, you thought of the great old school American trainers, let's be honest. Now it's guys from the UK, it's guys from all over the place. So I think that's great. I love it. And yeah, I mean, a guy like Andy Lee, he could potentially be doing this for 20, 30 years. And you think about all the champions he could bring up, it could be quite special.
We're talking to Michael Montero. He's got a podcast called The Neutral Corner, which, if his wife allows him, he gets on straight after fights and speaks with emotion, and as long as his kids aren't demanding his stuff. I wanted to know a bit more about you, Michael, like your background and your love affair with boxing, which, I mean, I've never boxed, but I've loved boxing since I was a little wee kid and wagging school so I could go and watch Muhammad Ali. But what's your background in boxing?
I'm pretty much a lifer. I mean, I grew up in Detroit and in child of the 80s. So Thomas Hitman Hearns, he was a hero. My sports heroes growing up were Thomas Hearns and Isaiah Thomas on the Detroit Pistons. Those were my two heroes. So I had a love affair with boxing back then. And my dad loved Mike Tyson, huge Mike Tyson guy. So he'd always have the Mike Tyson fights. And he'd rigged the cable to where he'd steal HBO because we couldn't afford it. And we watched Mike Tyson fights. And then when he saw the HBO truck driving down the street, the van, he'd go run back there and turn it off. But yeah, so I always laugh at that memory. It's just a great memory. But I loved boxing as a kid. And then in the Marine Corps, I was introduced to it in terms of training for the first time. I served in the Marine Corps, and they showed us boxing and different forms of hand-to-hand combat, but I had long arms and boxing worked really well for me. So I've trained and I've played around for years and years and years. I finally started competing officially in my 40s.
Wow.
I'm 44 now. And for the last 4 years, I've lived as a competitive fighter, first amateur, then pro. I did 6 amateur fights, and now I did 1 pro fight last year. I wanted to do 3 or 4 pro fights, but my wife and I have had 2 babies in 1 year. We didn't plan on that. It was a happy accident, but it's made it really difficult to train. So I don't know if I'll ever get in there again. I'd love to at least get one more, but we'll see. Yeah. But having gone through the experience of fighting, and there's so many little nuances, so many little things, it's made my appreciation for fighters tenfold. It's grown tenfold. So I just love this sport. It's crazy. It's wacky. It's dysfunctional. It's like being at a dysfunctional family dinner where everybody fights, everybody argues about politics, but at the end of the day, you're all hugging each other and saying, I love you. That's boxing. That's why I love it.
Very last comment. I won't tell you my view. Jake Paul, Mike Tyson. Immediate reaction to that.
Well, you heard it. You just heard my immediate reaction.
Same as mine.
You know, I saw that announcement and I thought to myself, why the hell not? You know, like Jake Paul has a very specific thing that he's doing. I think it's pretty clear. We all know what he's doing. Find a name, whether it's an old MMA fighter. I think he fought an NBA player that tried to do boxing. That didn't work out well for him. And now he's going to fight Mike Tyson, who a lot of like young fans that were born, let's say after 2000, they just don't know how popular Mike Tyson was. It was literally like Michael Jackson and Mike Tyson were the like two most famous people in the world. Mm. He really, really was huge. So from a marketing standpoint, a business standpoint, I totally get it. What I don't know is this going to be a real fight or an exhibition? Is there going to be scoring, no scoring? I don't know those details, but this is 100% for the money. It is prize fighting after all.
I'm just worried about Mike. I've had people at work say, oh, Mike will just knock him out. And I'm like, he's nearly 60, mate. He's nearly 60.
He's 57.
Yeah.
I actually think if anyone's going to get knocked out, it's Mike. Mm. And I'm a big Mike Tyson guy. But Jake Paul is in the prime of his life physically. He's been active. He's been fighting. He's been doing this now for, 5 or 6 years? Mm. So let's give the kid credit. He's taking it seriously. He's never going to be an elite-level fighter. But he, on paper, if this thing was 10 rounds or something, I think he'd stop Tyson. Mm. That's where we're at. Mm. But again, they might do it as like an exhibition or something. Again, I don't know. But if they did it like that, bigger gloves, exhibition, no scoring, then I think they're just going to dance around and give the fans a show, and that'll be that.
Mm. Michael, brilliant to chat to you. Technology agreed with us today, which is just brilliant. as always, love talking boxing, especially with you, sir. So thanks heaps for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Let's do it again soon.